You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters Live. Welcome to the podcast that showcases the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and I'm a gastronaut. Now, I always think that I'm a diet skeptic. I read about the latest new diet and I simply roll my eyes. But the reality is that I do care about what I eat, how much I eat, the balance of foods I'm eating. I even cut back on carbs when I feel I need to. So maybe I should wind my neck in and accept that I'm on a diet of sorts anyway. And why shouldn't you seek help from those shiny people with magnetic personalities and tight butts who have a plan to help you live more healthily, lose weight and be a happier person in exchange for a few quid? So today, we're putting the ketogenic diet in the spotlight. This low-carb diet is controversial, but it's become a huge industry. There are best-selling books about it, phone apps, meal plans, podcasts, the Kardashians and Halle Berry apparently swear by it, obvs. It's also influencing food culture in other ways. Keto flag dishes have started appearing on menus in restaurants. But there are as many warnings about keto as there are people promoting it. In 2020, it was ranked the worst diet of the year for healthy eating by US News and World Report. And if you search the NHS website for it, you'll only find it as a medical therapy for drug-resistant epilepsy in children. So what is the ketogenic diet, and can a diet this controversial really be the best for health and weight loss? To explore the science and bust the myths, I'm joined by Sophie Medlin, consultant dietitian and director of City Dietitians and chair of the British Dietetic Association for London. Hello there, Sophie.
Hi, Stefan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a great, great pleasure. And now, over the years, there have been various versions of low-carb diets. I remember the Atkins diet, once described as a high-calorie way to stay thin forever. So first of all, what is a ketogenic diet and what are the differences between keto and Atkins?
Yeah, great question. So Atkins and keto are very similar, and there's lots of different versions of a low carbohydrate diet, as you say, that are kind of all sneakily trying to not call themselves a low carbohydrate diet because they're trying to market themselves in a slightly different way, but they're all much of a muchness. A keto diet really is a very low carbohydrate diet though, with generally a strong focus on having more fat in your diet and very, very little, if no carbohydrates at all. And that can be quite difficult for people to sustain, as we will explore, I'm sure, but there's not a huge amount of difference between Atkins and keto and many of the other sorts of similar things that are perhaps named something different, but actually are the same sort of thing.
And what are the mechanics of a keto diet? How is it supposed to work? What's the function going on in there?
So as you say, we found about the keto diet through using it as a therapeutic diet for children with epilepsy. And it's actually very effective for controlling epilepsy in children. It must always be done under medical supervision and it must always be done with the support of specialist dietitians. It's not something that parents should just try at home and take children off their medications ever. It can also be used in adults with epilepsy as well. And it was developed for that purpose. And then it's sort of been co-opted by the weight loss community and by diet culture in general. And essentially, what happens when you don't have any carbohydrates in your diet is that you use fat as your energy source. And the way that we do that is by converting fat from our diet or fat from our body into ketones, which are produced in our liver. They're essentially acids that are produced in our liver, and our brain and our body can use those for energy, where it would usually use glucose or glycogen stored in our muscles.
Mm-hmm. So this is the concept of ketosis, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And that's the function of sort of switching from using blood sugars to ketones instead.
Exactly that, yeah. So it's the switch in metabolism from metabolizing carbohydrates for energy into metabolizing fats for energy. And what's really important to point out is that it's not always your body fat that's being converted into ketones. It's primarily the fat from your diet that you're having that's converted into those ketones. So when people think that it's always their body fat that they're burning when they're in ketosis, that's just not the case.
Yeah. But it does, it's got that beautiful sense of a magic twist, doesn't it? It's got that, it's like a beautiful selling point where you can sort of spin a little story around it that says, there's a magic reason that this is going to work. Do you think that that's taken advantage of a little bit?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think from a diet culture perspective, from a kind of marketing perspective, from people trying to sell you this quick fix, this magical potion to losing the weight, it's something that's heavily marketed and in a very irresponsible way.
Let's just put keto aside for a second and talk about the concept of diets anyway. I mean, is most of the population of the UK on some sort of diet at any one time? Is it important? I mean, people's perception of their own body can be devastating and ruin people's lives. I mean, what's the impact of being the wrong size, feeling that you're not right?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I work with women now who are in their sort of 50s, 60s, who've yo-yo dieted their whole lives because, you know, when they were 15, someone told them they were fat and they went on a diet and have never, ever been a shape or size that they're happy with and hate their bodies and diet their entire lives. And that's so toxic and such a waste.
It's a miserable place to be in, isn't it?
Horrible way to live. And obviously they go on all the different crash diets. They've tried every diet under the sun and none of them have worked, in inverted commas. And the reason that none of them work is because actually we can't really hate ourselves into being healthy. And keto is one of those things sort of thrown at us as being the solution to problems. And all of these fad diets are really these kind of extreme cutting out food group kind of diets are sold as a magic fix to someone feeling unhappy about their body, when of course that isn't the fix. Improving your body image and improving your self-worth is the way to improve those sorts of things.
Yeah, but that's difficult, isn't it?
And you need support for it. It's not something you can do at home on your own.
It's like we're not really prepared for that. And I think what you say is really right. You're after the magic bullet. It's hard work doing the really systemic things that to make yourself happier, to increase your self-respect, to start eating better broadly and to sit on your infatuation with certain types of food and things like that. So, but let's hold back because that's a very conceptual idea. We'll come back to that in a second. Let's go back to the keto diet. Now, from the way that you described the keto diet, it seems like a sort of quite a dramatic intervention. You're talking about dramatically lowering a very normal diet's worth of carbs. So what happens when you use what sounds like an emergency mechanism in the longer term? Does it create problems?
We don't have good data for that, is the truth. So we don't know what happens to people when they are on a ketogenic diet for an extended period of time. We know that children still grow and develop normally, and that's positive. We know that they still gain weight, so people should be aware of that too. But we don't have good data that says that it's safe or effective and doesn't have side effects to use a ketogenic diet in the long, long term, despite what sort of the fanatics of ketogenic diets might tell you about how our ancestors lived and all of those kinds of things. Course isn't the case as far as we can tell.
I mean, do you think that there's a case for saying there are a bunch of people out there trying to help? They're holding out a hand and saying, I've got a solution for you. I've got a way to focus the input of food in a certain way. I mean, does it make that much difference if you try a keto diet?
So we know that people can experience rapid weight loss on a ketogenic diet. The problem is that for the vast majority of people, it's unsustainable. And right. So what then happens is they fail and then fall down this path of feeling like there's something wrong with them and their self-esteem gets lower and everything gets worse in that department, right? So that's the real risk with ketogenic diets in terms of it being missold to people as something that works for everybody and is the absolute magic bullet for everybody in every way.
So what do you tell your patients? I mean, I'm sure people must come to you all the time and say, so I've heard this keto thing. What's your general response to them?
Well, I also see lots of people who have been on a ketogenic diet and have done really bad damage to their gut health because, of course, you're cutting out so much fibre from your diet. And that has a huge impact on things like irritable bowel syndrome.
It can be long lasting. It's a whole sequence of events that you kick off.
Absolutely. And so those sorts of things are profound. And those are things that I see regularly in my practice. You know, people saying, I went on a ketogenic diet for 3 months and now I have all of these terrible symptoms and I had this bug and I can't get over it and my immunity is different and everything else. So we see those things happening. And that's one of the big risks, I think, in terms of following a ketogenic diet. And one of the things that we need to think about when patients come to my clinic, I will, of course, explain those sorts of things to them. And it's really worth pointing out that a lower carbohydrate diet is a really effective way for lots of people to manage their weight. And what I mean by that is just being a bit more conscious of those starchy carbohydrates that we're consuming and the quantities of them, and focusing a bit more on lean proteins and vegetables and fruits. And that's a really effective way of managing your weight for many people a lot of the time. And again, it's not for everybody and nothing is for everybody, but that's certainly something that people can start to think about.
Hi there, only me. I just want to break into the conversation to say that if you're enjoying this episode, then once it's finished, you might want to check out the edition where we bust the myths around another recent diet phenomenon. Just go to foodmatterslive.com and search intermittent fasting. Now, back to the chat. When you're trying to help people, I mean, as you say, it's a huge psychological hole to fall down. You know, you can get really trapped in it. I mean, is half of what you're doing therapy? Is it about talking people through their concept of themselves as much as the foods that they're going to eat?
Absolutely. Body image and how you feel about yourself has a huge and profound impact on the foods that you are going to eat, on food choice, we call it, as does your lifestyle. So when we're stressed and we're in that kind of cortisol state, we end up wanting more high energy foods because your body's in that fight or flight mode where it wants to fuel up just in case you've got to run away or fight. So lots of stress drives us to eat more foods. Our food environment, the foods we have around us, and when we're super hungry and we go to a sandwich shop to buy a coffee, obviously we're going to eat a pastry as well. That's how it kind of works. That's how human behavior works, and they know that and we know that. So we have to try and manage all of those sorts of things too. Lack of sleep has a huge and profound impact on our appetite regulation. So there are so many things that have an impact that aren't just not understanding about healthy eating. Very few of my patients need me to tell them that eating more fruit and vegetables will help them to manage their weight, or eating less cake will help them.
We know, don't we? We know. It's so complicated. Let's just get back to the keto diet and take it apart a little bit more. For a typical keto meal plan, what will people eat and what will they not be eating?
Yeah, great question. So we know that people will be primarily focusing on fats and protein, and often they'll even be limiting fruits. Well, they'll certainly be limiting fruits and maybe not having any fruit, but we might have berries and things like that. But they'll primarily be having things like, perhaps in the morning they might have some plain yogurt with some berries, for example. They may have bacon and sausages and perhaps some green vegetables like some kale or something like that if we're lucky. Yeah. Lots of people, of course, just eat bacon and mushrooms and things like that and don't get the sort of healthier things into their diet. Often people are encouraged to drink something called bulletproof coffee, which is coffee that's got fats in it, so it's got butter in it. I know. And of course, you will be using that fat from the butter as your energy source, not your body fat, when you have those kinds of things. And of course, the way that we end up eating, or lots of people end up eating when they are on a ketogenic diet, is very high in saturated fat. Yep. And however people try to repackage that and suggest that that's not dangerous, the best data we have available to date shows how dangerous animal fats in particular are to our overall health. And, you know, the keto community can try and cover that up in whatever way they want to, but ultimately the best data we have available at the moment shows that that's still an issue and something we all need to be concerned about.
And it sounds like if you make those diet decisions, you're basically doing things like avoiding fibre.
Yeah.
I mean, as you could do kale, as you say, but you're by taking out and taking out fruit just seems a bit bonkers. I mean, OK, let's face it, Sophie, it sounds like you don't like the keto diet.
No, I haven't been a very good journalist, have I? I should have come in a bit of a more neutral term. But no, I mean, the problem is I see the harm it causes, and that makes me super biased. I don't see the people who it's worked really well for a short period of time. They've lost the weight and they're very happy. That's not going to be the people that I see. And that, you know, we all have to have a view on that.
And out of interest, I mean, obviously you see such a wide range of people. Is there anyone that you have suggested it to? I mean, that, you know, people might have a peculiar need for it. I mean, maybe it's not, but not epilepsy related. Is there anyone that you've recommended the keto diet to?
No, I would never recommend a keto diet for the reasons we've discussed. So obviously the potential damage to our gut health, which, you know, I'm a colorectal dietitian, and that's something that I would never be advocating for people. Yeah. It also has a huge impact on our relationship with food. So we can't really eat out as easily. We have to have special foods. You have to have your special keto bread and your keto pasta, and everything just becomes a little bit too restrictive, and that obviously has that psychological impact as well. And as well, we're increasing people's saturated fat intake, and we know that's dangerous. So there's no real indication for doing it apart from for epilepsy, and I'm not a specialist in that area, so that's not something that I would be doing.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about cutting back on carbs generally, because that, I guess that's if there's anything we can get from the keto diet, it's we need some sort of takeaway. You mentioned that cutting back a little bit on carbs can be helpful. Can you talk a little bit more about that and about how carbs ought to feature in a decent diet?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I think we should point out at this point is worth thinking about is that many of these sort of dietary tribes that can occur, if we think about veganism, and now we have carnivores at the other end. Now we've got keto, and we've got people who are eating vegan diet, for example, with loads of carbohydrates in it. Whenever we have these kind of polarizations of diets, when we settle back in the middle of those extremes, that's probably where we should all be in the first place. So pre-keto, we had the kind of Weight Watchers world where people were on very low-fat diets and they weren't allowed to eat nuts or avocado or any of these kinds of things. Well, of course, that's not great either. We all need to find this comfortable and happy middle ground where we're not eating loads and loads of carbohydrates that we know don't have great nutritional benefits and are having an impact on our weight. But we all find we are eating enough fruits and vegetables. We're not demonizing fruit or nuts or these healthy foods, right? So within the middle of that is this lower carbohydrate bracket where perhaps you're having, instead of having cereal for breakfast, a bread for lunch, and then a bowl of pasta in the evening, you're perhaps thinking about focusing your meals a little bit more on vegetables or fruit, a source of protein, and then some carbs as a bit of a complement to that. So for example, some yogurt with fruit and a tablespoon of muesli in the morning, as opposed to a big bowl of muesli on its own. Lunchtime, thinking about having a salad, perhaps with a small amount of carbohydrates on the side, but not being the main focus of the meals. And similar in the evening, with sort of thinking about having a protein source and maybe three portions of veg. And some of those are going to have some starch in them anyway. And if one of those is some potato, then that's fine. But it's just about balancing things out a little bit differently. And that can help enormously with things like appetite regulation. So when we have more fiber in our diet, it means that, and more protein, we're fuller for longer. And that keeps us going in between meals. We're less likely to focus on snacking so much. And there are lots of great benefits there. You can still eat out, you still eat normal food, and you're still enjoying your diet, hopefully, but ultimately you're not having those things that are perhaps not serving you as well in terms of your health goals.
Change is hard though, isn't it? I mean, change, just shifting, partly because of the mechanics of cooking, the way you're set up, that your nearest shop, the kitchen that you've got, your kids, you know, timings and things like that. Do you delve into things like that, sort of tricks and techniques to help people to actually make that shift? Because, you know, you can say all these things to somebody, and I can imagine somebody walking out going, oh, flip sake, so much to put into operation. How do you really help them make those shifts? Is it about flavour? Is it about making the food taste better? Is it about ways of cooking, buying things in?
Yeah, some of that is all important. All of those factors can be helpful. But what's really important is that I work with patients on their own diet and their own lifestyle. So I'm not saying, okay, now you've got to eat this meal plan that I've prepared for 100 other people. I'm saying, okay, tell me about your life and what goes on during the day. And let's talk about some small changes that you could make in a stepwise fashion. So let's do the big wins first. You'll start to lose weight quite quickly and then you'll feel happy. We'll do some smaller things as we go along and refine things. And people can do that for themselves. It might sound difficult, but you can do it for yourself at home where you think, okay, where are my real pitfalls? Where am I really struggling? And when is my, you know, lifestyle falling off track? And what can I do to improve that a little bit? And often it's actually really straightforward things like having a snack in the afternoon rather than letting yourself get so hungry that the vending machine or the snack cupboard is irresistible, or that you're getting home and you're so hungry that actually delivery is the only option because you haven't got the space and capacity to cook for yourself. Those sorts of things are really helpful and important. And it is about breaking it down for a person so that they can make it applicable to their life and so that it's manageable for them in a way that perhaps it hasn't been before. So when you pick up a diet book and it says you've got to change absolutely everything about your diet, and now you've got to eat goji berries for breakfast and quinoa and all these things you've never heard of, that's impossible. But when we go, okay, what do you like to eat? What's your day like? What shops are near you? What have you got near you for lunch? Yeah. Let's make this really practical for you. That's where it can be really helpful.
Now, I imagine that dialogue and tone is vital to this. I mean, you are obviously brilliant at talking about this. You're saying things and I trust what you're saying, but you're fighting all those people out there who have got their magnetic personalities, who can be excitable, who can inspire. Is there a bit of a battle going on between hocus pocus remedies, snake oil solutions, and the truth?
Oh, 100%. And social media is absolutely rife with this nonsense information about nutrition. And I spend so much of my life fighting against it.
Are the worst bits of it?
I mean, ketos are pretty bad. Well, the low-carb zealots are pretty hard work to come alongside. You know, there used to be a time where we could at least all agree on that eating fruit and vegetables was good. But now, because of this...
But now that's gone as well. It's insane.
You know, I work with children in different capacities and often they'll say to me, oh, will fruit make me fat? And this is sort of seven-year-olds worrying about these kinds of things. And that comes from social media and obviously their families and things like that at home. This is a real, real problem in my world. And one of the reasons for that is when I'm giving information, I'm giving you this kind of caveated piece of information that you should do this and this might work for you some of the time, or the term that I often use is this might work for some people some of the time, and that's not what people want to hear.
Yeah. No, that's not the magic.
They want to say, this is going to work for you, I'm going to fix all your problems, buy this thing and everything's going to be okay. And I would never say that because I know it's not true, but there are plenty of people out there saying that and getting away with it because it's so unregulated, and that's really a problem for everybody.
Yeah. Now, we've got changes to regulations in high fat, salt and sugar coming in soon. Now, that may or may not have an effect on people's diet, and hopefully it will change things for the better. But will it have an effect on diets themselves, on these kind of all encompassing diets when people will be companies will be changing the formulation of foods and things like that? Do you think it's going to have an effect on the way that you will give advice to people?
Well, we do know that when we make these governmental decisions in terms of food reformulation, that that's one of the most effective things we can do to support people to improve their health through their diet. Mm. So, as you know, we can shout and scream about eating five a day all day long, and actually people are either going to do it or they're not, or it's either going to be practical for them or it's not. Whereas when we do sort of things like food reformulation laws, that does have an active impact on people's health. And we've seen it through salt legislation, we've seen it through the sugar tax and these sorts of things. And as much as people hate it and call it nanny state and all of those sorts of things, actually it does have an impact on those who are most vulnerable. In terms of will it affect my practice, not significantly, because obviously I'm not often recommending to people that they eat a lot of convenience foods or pre-prepared foods anyway. It will be interesting to see how, for example, some of these really high fat keto foods have to be repackaged and how that looks for them. Yeah. Because ultimately it's not, when foods are very high in saturated fat, which keto foods often are, is that going to be allowed anymore? How is that going to change? Is that going to have to change the price point and all those sorts of things? So it will be interesting to see how it does impact some of those more niche diet products.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to reduce your expertise to sound bites, but I wonder, can I reduce your expertise to some sound bites, please? What are the simple things that work best for the most people? When you've worked with patients, what are the things that you see? Is it the easiest things? Is it a particular tip or even a particular recipe? What's the magic?
Yeah, great question. So there are a few things to think about, and one, I guess they all kind of come under appetite regulation, really. Mm-hmm. So if you are a stressed, tired person, you're going to be a hungry person. So you need to think about how those things are impacting your food choice. But equally, if you...
Which means looking at yourself and admitting things that are quite tough to admit.
Yeah, actually, definitely. We also need to be thinking about if you're not eating enough at breakfast time, you're going to be hungry at that 11 o'clock time. And if that's when you're going to the coffee shop to buy a coffee and there's croissants in front of you, you're going to eat them. You're human. That's what happens. And similarly around, we were talking previously about that snack point in the afternoon. If you've not had enough for lunch, say you've had soup and because you're dieting, and that's just not going to be enough to get you through to the evening, you're going to need a strategic snack in the afternoon to get you through. Something like carrot sticks and hummus, apple and peanut butter, those kinds of things. If we try and really focus our meals around the vegetables, that can really help people as well with appetite regulation because of the amount of fiber that's in them and the water that's in them and all those sorts of things. Yeah. So if you're going at lunchtime, you think, okay, I'm going to have two portions of veg at lunch, I'm going to have two portions of veg at breakfast, and in the evening I'm going to have three portions of veg, that can really help you just to focus. And of course, having those extra plants displaces other less healthy foods in your diet, keeps you fuller for longer, and it's about adding things in rather than telling people to take things out. And psychologically that can be really helpful.
My greatest achievement in terms of diet for my kids has been just chopping up loads of vegetables and sticking them in front of them. And just by boredom alone, they'll if they're doing their homework or whatever it might be, they'll just get consumed. And then later on, they might have whatever food they have, but at least they've padded out with fiber. It's on a good basis.
And that's one of the things I think we all need to be a bit better at for ourselves, is that kind of positive parenting aspect to our diet. So you go, I know you want to eat that cake, but we did have some cake at lunchtime. So should we have some fruit first and see how that goes and see how we go afterwards?
Yeah. Do that first, and the cake's still there.
We can still get it if you need anytime it. You want, but should we try and have some fruit first and see how that goes? Do you really want cake, or should we go out for a quick walk and see how we feel? Those kinds of things. Instead of going, oh, you want cake again, you're greedy, you're awful, what's wrong with you, you know, you're such a failure, you'll never do this. The difference between that kind of positive parenting voice and how you would look after yourself if you were a child versus how we generally talk about ourselves when we're struggling on a diet as adults is that's really profound. You know, that has a big impact.
Okay, let's get back to this horrible keto diet then. Do you think the keto diet will stick around or will it fade away? I mean, there's a hell of a lot of stuff out there. The amount of podcasts alone is huge.
Yeah, I think it will be superseded by the next fad that comes along, to be honest. And I'm going to be absolutely trolled for this on social media. So,
know. It worked for me, worked for my aunt.
Yeah. You probably get away with it, Stefan, as always. I think it will get superseded by the next fad that comes along. The keto diet, you know, there are these real advocates for it who have had fantastic, you know, lifestyle changes and it's really working for them. But they are the minority of people, despite them shouting very loud about it. Most people will struggle on the keto diet and they'll figure out very quickly that it's not for them, not least of all because of the constipation and the keto flu and all those sorts of things that happen alongside it.
You've sold it there, haven't you? okay, so just finally, what's the best way to make sure that you're not following a diet that may not be the healthiest solution for you?
So I would say just look at the diet itself. Is it telling you to cut out food groups? Any diet that talks about cutting out any sorts of fruits and vegetables is not the diet for you. Think about, is it actually impacting your mental health and well-being? Is it something that's having meaning that you can't eat out with your friends or your family? Are you having to eat different things to other people? Those sorts of things are really profound and important. And anything that's steering you away from listening to your body, am I hungry now? Have I eaten enough? Anything that's sort of saying you can only eat 200 grams of rice at 4 o'clock, we've got some problems there. So really the best way to focus on these things, if you've struggled for a long period of time in particular, is looking at intuitive eating, where you learn to start trusting your body again.
If alarm bell rings, then that's alarm bells ringing and it's not right for you.
Absolutely.
Sophie, thank you so much. You've been absolutely brilliantly informative about this and thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Sophie Medlin, consultant dietitian and director of City Dietitians and chair of the British Dietetic Association for London. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Table Talk podcast. We've got hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. For instance, if you search plant-based foods within healthy, sustainable diets, you'll get the episode featuring Dr. Giles Yeo and Dr. Hazel Wallace, all about how you persuade people to move to a more sustainable diet. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcast platform, and thank you so much for listening.